Human Impact, weet u nog, die nieuwe band met leden van Unsane en Cop Shoot Cop? Net voor de coronacrisis verscheen hun geweldige debuut, dat ook in ons eindejaarslijstje terechtkwam. Maar de voorziene Europese tournee werd keer op keer uitgesteld tot nu. Ze spelen volgende maand onder meer in de Botaniek en daar delen we een van de komende weken vrijkaarten vooruit. Dit was nog een gloednieuw nummer van hun, Imperative van Human Impact. Soms hebben we wel eens een vreemd verlangen en dan vragen we ons bijvoorbeeld af wat je zou krijgen als je Action Beat, Knot en Dalek in de geluidsmixer blendt. Het antwoord daarop is Holy Scum. Hun plaat Strange Desires komt eraan en dit is alvast een single eruit. A World About to Die, Holy Scum.
and instructs jaded knowledge.
Psychedelic Metaphors was dit, de band rond songwriter Sam Taylor. En afgaande op zijn nieuwe plaats Surrealist Realities heeft de goede band een brede muzieksmaak, want ze gaat alle kanten op. Dat kunnen we alleen maar toejuichen. Dit was Zeitgeist Youth. En dan trekken we naar Canada, meer bepaald naar Vancouver, met de noisy shoegaze band Chemicass Nurse. Hun tweede album, Stiminoso, ligt klaar en zal worden uitgebracht door Mint Records. Deze week kregen we al een voorsmaakje in de vorm van het nummer Pet Mads met hun kenmerkende abstracte sound. De plaat werd gemixt door Greg Saunier, ook actief als drummer en medeoprichter van Dear Hoof. Dit was Chemicass Nurse, dit is Chemicass Nurse, liever met Pet Mads.
Pat Metz van Kamikaze Nerds. Dadelijk is er Sterplaten en daarin gaat het onder andere over het nieuwe Gonzo Circus. Daarvoor gaan we nog even op adem komen met de nieuwe single van Trams. Eind 2017 besloot het trio een adempauze in te lassen. Langzaam begonnen ze terug muziek te maken. Op 22 juli komt de Personal Best hun nieuwe album uit. En dit is dat nieuwe nummer, Breed, van Trams. Tot volgende week.
Come on. This is the SFF Audio Podcast.
Hi, I'm Scott, and welcome to the SFF Audio Podcast. This week we have Greg Marguerite of LibriVox reading Beyond the Door by Philip K. Dick. And stay tuned after the story for a discussion of the story.
Beyond the Door by Philip K. Dick. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Reading by Greg Marguerite. Beyond the Door by Philip K. Dick. Larry Thomas bought a cuckoo clock for his wife, without knowing the price he would have to pay. That night at the dinner table he brought it out and set it down beside her plate. Doris stared at it, her hand to her mouth. "My God, what is it?" She looked up at him bright-eyed. "Well, open it." Doris tore the ribbon and paper from the square package with her sharp nails, her bosom rising and falling. Larry stood watching her as she lifted the lid. He lit a cigarette and leaned against the wall. "A cuckoo clock," Doris cried. "A real old cuckoo clock, just like my mother had." She turned the clock over and over. "Just like my mother had when Pete was still alive." Her eyes sparkled with tears. "It's made in Germany," Larry said. After a moment he added, "Carl got it for me wholesale. He knows some guy in the clock business. Otherwise I would have..." He stopped. Doris made a funny little sound. "I mean, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to afford it." He scowled. What's the matter with you? You've got your clock, haven't you? Isn't that what you want?" Doris sat holding onto the clock, her fingers pressed against the brown wood. "Well," Larry said, "what's the matter?" He watched in amazement as she leaped up and ran from the room, still clutching the clock. He shook his head. "Never satisfied. They're all that way. Never get enough." He sat down at the table and finished his meal. The cuckoo clock was not very large. It was handmade, however, and there were countless frets on it, little indentations and ornaments scored into the soft wood. Doris sat on the bed, drying her eyes and winding the clock. She set the hands by her wristwatch. Presently she carefully moved the hands to 10:02. She carried the clock over to the dresser and propped it up. Then she sat waiting, her hands twisting together in her lap, waiting for the cuckoo to come out, for the hour to strike. As she sat, she thought about Larry and what he had said, and what she had said, too, for that matter. Not that she could be blamed for any of it. After all, she couldn't keep listening to him forever without defending herself. You had to blow your own trumpet in the world. She touched her handkerchief to her eyes suddenly. Why did he have to say that about getting it wholesale? Why did he have to spoil it all? If he felt that way, he needn't have gotten in the first place. She clenched her fists. He was so mean, so damn mean. But she was glad of the little clock sitting there ticking to itself, with its funny grilled edges and the door. Inside the door was the cuckoo, waiting to come out. Was he listening? His head cocked on one side, listening to hear the clock strike so that he would know to come out? Did he sleep between hours? Well, she would soon see him. She could ask him, and she would show the clock to Bob. He would love it. Bob loved old things, even old stamps and buttons. He liked to go with her to the stores. Of course, it was a little awkward, but Larry had been staying at the office so much, and that helped. If only Larry didn't call up sometimes to... There was a whir. The clock shuddered, and all at once the door opened. The cuckoo came out, sliding swiftly. He paused and looked around solemnly, scrutinizing her, the room, the furniture. It was the first time he had seen her, she realized, smiling to herself in pleasure. She stood up, coming toward him shyly. "Go on," she said. "I'm waiting." The cuckoo opened his bill. He whirred and chirped quickly, rhythmically. Then, after a moment of contemplation, he retired, and the door snapped shut. She was delighted. She clapped her hands and spun in a little circle. He was marvelous. Perfect. And the way he had looked around, studying her, sizing her up. He liked her. She was certain of it. And she, of course, loved him at once, completely. He was just what she had hoped would come out of the little door. Doris went to the clock. She bent over the little door, her lips close to the wood. "Do you hear me?" she whispered. "I think you're the most wonderful cuckoo in the world." She paused, embarrassed. "I hope you'll like it here." Then she went downstairs again, slowly, her head high. Larry and the cuckoo clock really never got along well from the start. Doris said it was because he didn't wind it right, and it didn't like being only half wound all the time. Larry turned the job of winding over to her. The cuckoo came out every quarter hour and ran the spring down without remorse, and someone had to be ever after it, winding it up again. Doris did her best, but she forgot a good deal of the time. Then Larry would throw his newspaper down with an elaborate, weary motion and stand up. He would go into the dining room where the clock was mounted on the wall over the fireplace. He would take the clock down, and making sure that he had his thumb over the little door, he would wind it up. "Why do you put your thumb over the door?" Doris asked once. "You're supposed to." She raised an eyebrow. "Are you sure? I wonder if it isn't that you don't want him to come out while you're standing so close." "Why not?" "Maybe you're afraid of him." Larry laughed. He put the clock back on the wall and gingerly removed his thumb. When Doris wasn't looking, he examined his thumb. There was still a trace of the nick cut out of the soft part of it. Who or what had pecked at him? One Saturday morning, when Larry was down at the office working over some important special accounts, Bob Chambers came to the front porch and rang the bell. Doris was taking a quick shower. She dried herself and slipped into her robe. When she opened the door, Bob stepped inside, grinning. "Hi," he said, looking around. "It's all right? Larry's at the office?" "Fine." Bob gazed at her slim legs below the hem of the robe. "How nice you look today." She laughed. "Be careful. Maybe I shouldn't let you in after all." They looked at one another, half amused, half frightened. Presently Bob said, "If you want, I'll..." "No, for God's sake." She caught hold of his sleeve. "Just get out of the doorway so I can close it. Mrs. Peters across the street, you know." She closed the door. "And I want to show you something," she said. "You haven't seen it." He was interested. "An antique or what?" She took his arm, leading him toward the dining room. "You'll love it, Bobby." She stopped, wide-eyed. "I hope you will. You must. You must love it. It means so much to me. He means so much." "He?" Bob frowned. "Who is he?" Doris laughed. "You're jealous. Come on." A moment later they stood before the clock, looking up at it. "He'll come out in a few minutes. Wait until you see him. I know you two will get along just fine." "What does Larry think of him?" "They don't like each other. Sometimes when Larry's here, he won't come out. Larry gets mad if he doesn't come out on time. He says..."
"Says what?"
Doris looked down. "He always says that he's been robbed, even if he did get it wholesale." She brightened. "But I know he won't come out because he doesn't like Larry. When I'm here alone, he comes right out for me every 15 minutes, even though he really only has to come out on the hour." She gazed up at the clock. "He comes out for me because he wants to. We talk. I tell him things, of course. I'd like to have him upstairs in my room, but it wouldn't be right." There was the sound of footsteps on the front porch. They looked at each other, horrified. Larry pushed the front door open, grunting. He set his briefcase down and took off his hat. Then he saw Bob for the first time. "Chambers, I'll be damned." His eyes narrowed. "What are you doing here?" He came into the dining room. Doris drew her robe about her, helplessly backing away. "I..." Bob began. "That is, we..." He broke off, glancing at Doris. Suddenly the clock began to whir. The cuckoo came rushing out, bursting into sound. Larry moved towards him. "Shut that din off," he said. He raised his fist toward the clock. The cuckoo snapped into silence and retreated. The door closed. "That's better." Larry studied Doris and Bob standing mutely together. "I came over to look at the clock," Bob said. "Doris told me that it's a rare antique and that..." "Nuts. I bought it myself." Larry walked up to him. "Get out of here." He turned to Doris. "You too. And take that damn clock with you." He paused, rubbing his chin. "No. Leave the clock here. It's mine. I bought it and paid for it." In the weeks that followed after Doris left, Larry and the cuckoo clock got along even worse than before. For one thing, the cuckoo stayed inside most of the time, sometimes even at 12 o'clock when he should have been busiest. and if he did come out at all, he usually spoke only once or twice, never the correct number of times. And there was a sullen, uncooperative note in his voice, a jarring sound that made Larry uneasy and a little angry. But he kept the clock wound, because the house was very still and quiet, and it got on his nerves not to hear someone running around talking and dropping things. And even the whirring of a clock sounded good to him. But he didn't like the cuckoo at all, and sometimes he spoke to him. "Listen," he said late one night to the closed little door, "I know you can hear me. I ought to give you back to the Germans, back to the Black Forest." He paced back and forth. "I wonder what they're doing now, the two of them. That young punk with his books and his antiques. A man shouldn't be interested in antiques. That's for women." He set his jaw. "Isn't that right?" The clock said nothing. Larry walked up in front of it. "Isn't that right?" he demanded. "Don't you have anything to say?" He looked at the face of the clock. It was almost 11, just a few seconds before the hour. "All right. I'll wait until 11. Then I want to hear what you have to say. You've been pretty quiet these last few weeks since she left." He grinned wryly. "Maybe you don't like it here since she's gone." He scowled. "Well, I paid for you, and you're coming out whether you like it or not. You hear me?" 11 o'clock came. Far off at the end of town, the great tower clock boomed sleepily to itself. But the little door remained shut. Nothing moved. The minute hand passed on, and the cuckoo did not stir. He was someplace inside the clock, beyond the door, silent and remote. "All right, if that's the way you feel," Larry murmured, his lips twisting. "But it isn't fair. It's your job to come out. We all have to do things we don't like." He went unhappily into the kitchen and opened the great gleaming refrigerator. As he poured himself a drink, he thought about the clock. There was no doubt about it. The cuckoo should come out. Doris or no Doris. He had always liked her from the very start. They had got along well, the two of them. Probably he liked Bob, too. Probably he had seen enough of Bob to get to know him. They would be quite happy together, Bob and Doris and the cuckoo. Larry finished his drink. He opened the drawer at the sink and took out the hammer. He carried it carefully into the dining room. The clock was ticking gently to itself on the wall. "Look," he said, waving the hammer. "You know what I have here? You know what I'm going to do with it? I'm going to start on you first." He smiled. "Birds of a feather. That's what you are. The three of you." The room was silent. "Are you coming out, or do I have to come in and get you?" The clock whirred a little. "I hear you in there. You've got a lot of talking to do, enough for the last 3 weeks, as I figure it. You owe me." The door opened. The cuckoo came out fast, straight at him. Larry was looking down, his brow wrinkled in thought. He glanced up, and the cuckoo caught him squarely in the eye. Down he went, hammer and chair and everything, hitting the floor with a tremendous crash. For a moment the cuckoo paused, its small body poised rigidly. Then it went back inside the house. The door snapped tight shut after it. The man lay on the floor, stretched out grotesquely, his head bent over to one side. Nothing moved or stirred. The room was completely silent, except, of course, for the ticking of the clock. "I see," Doris said, her face tight. Bob put his arm around her, steadying her. "Doctor," Bob said, "can I ask you something?" "Of course," the doctor said. "Is it very easy to break your neck falling from so low a chair?" "It wasn't very far to fall. I wonder if it might not have been an accident. Is there any chance it might have been suicide?" The doctor rubbed his jaw. "I never heard of anyone committing suicide that way. It was an accident. I'm positive." "I don't mean suicide," Bob murmured under his breath, looking up at the clock on the wall. "I meant something else." But no one heard him. End of Beyond the Door by Philip K. Dick.
I'm Scott.
I'm Jesse.
I'm Tomahome.
I'm Greg.
Hello, hello.
Nice hello. To have you guys again.
Morning.
Hey, today we're going to talk about Beyond the Door by Philip K. Dick, the story you just heard on the podcast, and about a very angry bird.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
one.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Does have an angry bird, doesn't it?
must be an app for that.
Greg, you were saying that this is a puff piece. What is a? Oh no, he just had Philip K. Dick just had to make his rant or had to eat.
Just saying it was a potboiler, I don't think he put those elements that we all like best into this story. It's a script written in the 50s that I might have sent to Rod Serling for a Twilight Zone episode in between the ones that are really good.
Did you send it to Rod Serling?
No.
Okay.
My name is Talkie Tina.
No. What's that?
I was thinking of the Talkie Tina episode of Twilight Zone.
Okay. Yeah. Fine.
With Kojak.
What episode is that?
Do you know who Kojak is? Telly Savalas?
Yeah.
And I guess he's having a bad relationship with his family, and the doll starts to talk to him, and it says, "My name is Talkie Tina, and you're going to be sorry." It goes through like that.
I don't remember that one. I've watched them all, but
my favorites.
Yeah, it sounds good.
I think she makes him jump out the window or something at the end. They're in a hotel arguing.
Making Kojak jump out the window. Mm.
Spoiler.
Well, he didn't have
and the Simpsons did a version of it, too.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, Clown Without Pity as a clown doll.
This must have been during... that would have been a Halloween special or something.
Exactly, yeah. Treehouse of Horrors.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a Night Gallery episode where a British guy who was in India gets sent a doll for his niece who he's taking care of, and it's actually been created by his former enemies, and it's, you know, comes down the hall and tries to kill him and all this sort of stuff. So
I guess we get Chucky and all that too.
Hey, we're clowns.
We're talking about dolls.
Were clowns always scary, or do they just get scarier with time?
Well, Stephen King's fault.
Is it? I thought maybe it is.
Well, exaggeration is at the heart of both horror and humor. So it's not hard to cross that line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just exaggerated features and stuff. I mean, you're a kid, you're doing pattern recognition, you've got a bunch of human faces in your head, and all of a sudden this grotesquely exaggerated thing pops its face in and pulls a quarter from behind your ear, and it's just too freaky, man.
And you run over the room in terror.
I wonder what the percentage of kids are that freak out at that point immediately, or wait until they're adults to start freaking out. You know what I mean? It was one scary book. That was a good book.
Well, this story has something to that. I mean, it's an automaton, I guess, if rather than like just a doll or a clown, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a very primitive robot, I guess. But
well.
This has got to be a fantasy story in every kind of sense, right?
Isn't it kind of related to almost like a haunted house? You know, it's a cuckoo clock, but the cuckoo clock is haunted in a way. Haunted. Or possessed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she assumes that it's going to have this intelligence or malice or...
Yeah, and that's one interesting thing about the story to me.
Everybody
is that
does.
She seems to know that something's up with that thing immediately. It was almost like something that she's been through before.
Yes. Now, that's where I start to get my understanding, right? I wanted to talk, it's such a short story. There's such a short story. I mean, incredibly short. And yet there's a lot of detail. A lot of detail that... comes up that I was going, what does that mean? So I wanted to throw the first thing that struck me as, why is that in there? So it goes like this. "A cuckoo clock," Doris cried. "A real old cuckoo clock, like my mother had." Okay. And then she says, she turned the clock over and over. "Just like my mother had when Pete was still alive." Who's Pete? I was thinking, is that her dad?
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it can't be her dad, because she wouldn't call him Pete. She'd call him... It's her brother.
Yeah, her brother.
It's her brother.
Her dog.
It's her brother. It's got to be her brother, right?
Well...
Later on, I think I've got some evidence for it being her brother.
Okay.
But it could have been her dog, but what although Philip K. Dick likes dogs... I don't think there's any significance to it being a dog.
No.
I can't think of any. But I think it's her brother. When Pete was still left. So her younger brother who died is what I'm thinking. Right?
Now that we've read the story, we'd have to assume that he died in the same way.
Well, I think that that's a interesting analysis, but I don't think that's what happened.
Okay.
It's made in Germany. I think that's where cuckoo clocks are from, Germanic states. It's not Germany, right? Yeah, it makes sense.
He says he's going to send the clock back to the Germans in the Black Forest.
Yeah. You know, if she doesn't, she likes fine things. It says she's been raised on fine things, and I think the final line is: anyone who thought the she was going to choose the final prince should stay.
Was this? There was no fourth wall. The narrator would talk directly to you and make jokes about how stupid the story was. But anyway, I don't want to go on and on about Bullwinkle, but it set the stage. It set the stage for a lot of the stuff that the self-deprecating stuff that we like today. It was the first of its kind in that. Well, we're
doing it right now.
Right now, yeah.
I suppose, but
we're in sync, Greg.
See, anecdotal proof.
Well, we better not be on for 15 hours or 15 days or whatever, because I got to keep my anger murderer, right?
Yeah.
The 24-hour live SFF audio channel.
Oh, no.
No, I need a break to wind my cuckoo clock.
This has been the SFF Audio Podcast. Please join us at www.sffaudio.com.
Hemisphere, atmosphere, anywhere.
Chest.
Omnisphere, stratosphere, nowhere.
Chest.
Thermosphere, exosphere, everywhere. Hydrosphere, iosphere, elsewhere.
Chest.
Hemisphere, atmosphere, anywhere.
Chest.
Omnisphere, stratosphere, nowhere.
Chest.
Thermosphere, exosphere, everywhere.
Chest.
Hydrosphere, iosphere, elsewhere.
Chest.
Hemisphere, atmosphere, anywhere.
Chest.
Omnisphere, stratosphere, nowhere.
Chest.
Thermosphere, exosphere, everywhere.
Chest.
Hydrosphere, iosphere, elsewhere.
Chest. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to a radio show called Chest. We are here with Kelly and Nelly, ready to rock and be rocked.
universe is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. The world is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. God is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. This marble is a sphere whose center is glass, whose circumference I can feel in my mouth. This spit on this marble is a sphere whose center is nowhere, whose circumference is leaking everywhere. The universe is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. The world is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. God is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. This marble is a sphere whose center is glass, whose circumference I can feel in my mouth. This spit on this marble is a sphere whose center is nowhere, whose circumference is leaking everywhere.
The universe is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. The world is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. God is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere. This marble is a sphere whose center is glass, whose circumference I can feel in my mouth. This bit on this marble is a sphere whose center is nowhere, whose circumference is leaking everywhere. The universe is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere.
The world is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere.
God is a sphere whose center is everywhere, whose circumference is nowhere.
This marble is a sphere whose center is glass, whose circumference I can feel in my mouth.
This spit on this marble is a sphere whose center is nowhere, whose circumference is leaking everywhere.